In a twist of fate, this week I have a video to show Jeremy him to. I found this clip while I was just scrolling on TikTok, and it's a clip from a creator who does like motivational business content. And let me just let it speak for itself here.
Okay, all right.
So prepare yourself, prepare your ears, prepare your takes.
I'll listen intently.
All right, let's go.
Aves worked all the hours they were awake for their entire lives.
Uh-huh.
In American history, in Egyptian history, in the rest of the world that had slaves, which is most of the world at some given point. I think, if they can do it, so can I. Now you're like, well, did they have a happy existence? Well, they didn't get to pick the work they did, but it means that you can work. That's if you have the cat behind you. You can work every hour of the day. I'm like, well, if you get to have the cheese and you get to eat the cheese the whole way you're going, then... I mean, there's the famous quote, the person who the person who loves walking walks further than the person who loves the destination, right?
And so that's pretty much the majority of the clip. That's like interesting
because I love how he immediately recognizes that the analogy doesn't work.
Yeah,
he was like, "Well, do you get to decide what you do, and do you get to reap the rewards of what you do?" Yeah, I guess so.
And it's just like, I just think it's funny. I don't think it's like malicious, but I do think it's just absolutely ignorant and crazy that he landed on slavery. Well, that's the one thing. You could have said like farmers. You could have said like hunter gatherers.
To take your grind set content so far that you got to compare it to slavery is nutty to me.
And then say that it'd be cool if I worked every single hour of the day. That's wicked, bro. You could have said you know farmers put in a lot of hours. You could have said anything where there wasn't forced working involved.
Like you can see he's just trying to say I can work really hard too.
Yeah,
but comparing it to slavery is wild. Like there's no chance. Like it just, and I know this because he immediately recognizes that his analogy doesn't work and he backs off of it because there's no one that's gonna beat you or kill you if you don't work hard enough. There's no one that's going to be let's be real, sexually harass you or rape you to produce offspring because they have some kind of fetish for you and the people that they enslave. Mm-hmm. Come on, dog.
Well, that's why I think he had to pivot to the person who loves walking walks farther than the person who's just walking. It's like, yeah, that works a lot better for what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I feel like this kind of dude, and I love this kind of dude.
They're good. I want them to stay around.
The existence of this kind of guy tells me that there's far too many creators in the grind set space.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've had a grind set motivational guy inflation.
Yeah.
Because this dude now has to compare how hard he is working to literal slavery in order to stand out. And I know that clip blew up. I bet it did,
yeah,
right?
No. And it's like, he could have just said single moms. He could have said compared it to the people right now, the very real people who work like 2-3 jobs just to stay afloat.
Yeah, no, there's many examples of hard work, big dog. It doesn't have to be slavery.
You could have said doctors. If you want a right now example of someone who also makes high wages, you could have said anything else but slaves.
If you really got a virtue signal, there's kids in sweatshops and they work super hard. Like, I feel like I can
work
hard.
That's crazy too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy too. You're right.
These
Maybe
kids in the sweatshops, they make 19 cents and they still show up to work every day. Why can't I?
No bad idea in a brainstorm. Okay. I didn't post that take.
Maybe we could get in on the space.
Ooh, yeah. See, that's not one I would post, but I'm just throwing it out there to get the gears moving.
That one would stay in the drafts, absolutely. But I just thought that one kind of blew my mind.
God, that's perfect. I love those kind of guys so much.
Just so oblivious.
Yeah.
And I thought it was funny, and it really hit me in the heartstrings, because earlier this week, somebody said to us and called us a podcast, bro. And I was feeling some type of way about it, because I was like, that's not the stereotype for what we do, you know what I mean? Yeah,
like the podcast bro stereotype is conservatives.
Him.
Yeah.
That's this guy.
It's oblivious grind set dudes who talk all this stuff about working really hard without ever actually facing any adversity, especially not the adversity of slavery. I mean, come on. That is the podcast bro type, the kind that don't really think through their takes, the very ignorant kind of white guy. And I would say we don't do that.
I at least appreciate that he broadened the horizons beyond just American chattel slavery and was like, oh yeah, but Egypt too and everyone else in the world.
Very inclusive, yeah.
Very
really
inclusive.
Just smoothing over the differences between types of slavery
throughout
human history. Chattel slavery wasn't uniquely evil or disastrous or anything like that.
You know, they inspire me, really. If they could get it like that, I can get it like that.
What a way to start off the episode.
That's what I'm thinking. Thank you.
Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. We're recording on a Monday today, which is strange.
Yes, we are. It does feel weird.
I just got through a bout with COVID, but I survived.
He's here. He's right now. A very mild case
of COVID, but I'm here. We wanted to get the episode recorded, especially because an ungodly amount of news has popped off this week.
Oh my God, was it a week?
Just to give you a preview, we're going to be talking about Israel-Palestine, the conflict that's been happening, of course. It's the biggest piece of news that we have to talk about this week. This also now feels like a distant memory, but Kevin McCarthy lost his job, and that's something we need to talk about. I think that happened last Tuesday, which is just inauspicious for us.
That's what I'm saying. Worst time for it to happen.
But we'll talk about that today, and we got a couple of other news pieces. All around, bad news week.
Bad news week.
Do not have good things to report on. I guess Kevin
actually,
losing his
no,
job
that
is
one is
sick.
Sick. Kevin, that's pretty. That's fun. I was kicking my feet when that first happened.
Yeah, I was excited. Like, oh, that's good news for the podcast. And then Israel Palestine.
That's exactly what I thought. As soon as the Kevin McCarthy thing happened, I was like, oh, this is big. We could really sink our teeth into this one and and talk about this and on the pod this week. We've got a good story. We don't have to like scrape around trying to find stuff in state legislators. And then I don't know, biggest geopolitical conflict of the year outside of whatever's going on with Ukraine and Russia just happened.
Yeah, I guess we don't have to scrape around for it.
No, we definitely did not have to scrape around
but
for it.
It's not fun news, you know what I mean? It's all just really bad. And everyone has bad takes about it, except us.
Yeah, exactly.
And a select few others, but, you know, we're here.
Head in the Office, people you can come to for the most correct, most nuanced, most level-headed take on pretty much every issue.
Number one geopolitical podcast.
That's right. We're taking that title right back.
Restaking our claim once again today. Before we get into the episode, though, I'll remind you all, as I always do, down in the description, you can go and become a patron at patreon.com/headintheofficepod. Get early access to all of our episodes. Hear the news on time rather than on Wednesday or later in the week whenever you listen. Subscribe to us on YouTube, of course, as well. Follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Discord. You know, become a part of the Hiddo community. Join us.
Check out our posts. We post some funny stuff on Twitter sometimes.
We do.
All the time, really.
We're really hilarious guys.
I know.
And we post good takes. Sometimes you can get a little precursor to what we're going to say on the show.
Exactly.
Or just us being funny.
A little preview.
Yeah, exactly. Another way you can support the show, though, is by leaving us a 5-star review. And we've got two of them today. Three of them today. Sorry. Forgot that. I didn't see the last one. The first two are pretty long. I didn't see the last one at the end. But leave us a 5-star review on Apple, and we will read it here on the show. And we'll also love you forever, non-parasocially. Mm-hmm. The first one here is by Emma the Dude Slayer, finally a Hiddo head. Emma says, after a long but enjoyable journey through the extensive Hiddo backlog, I have now listened to every episode of Head in the Office and started re-listening to episodes from when I first found the pod. Finally claiming the title of Hiddo Head. This isn't my first review, but I had to mark this momentous occasion. Mm-hmm. This has been my favorite podcast since I discovered it in January, and I eagerly await the Sunday sermon every week for my commute to work. Oh, well, sorry you're not getting it this week.
Yeah,
I'm even in the process of indoctrinating my girlfriend into a true leftist and putting her onto the pod. I could not recommend this podcast enough. Jeremy and Gage offer insightful commentary and consistently good takes while keeping the pod entertaining and funny despite the constant doomer news. They actively engage with the commentary and create a welcoming and fun atmosphere. Looking forward to this year's holiday pregame. Oh, we got a plan for that.
Oh, hell
that's
yeah.
Actually
that's
really soon.
Right around the corner.
So I can prepare to go for smoke at my girlfriend's conservative family Christmas.
Hell yeah.
With definitive takes straight from the Hiddo boys. They'll have no idea what hit them. Truly the number one geopolitical podcast. And I hope that rings true today for
Dang,
sure.
Listening since January is crazy that you've been with us full pregnancy, all three terms. You better not postpartum abortion us like all these Democrats do.
Like all the liberals, yeah.
Like all the liberals in all these Democrat-run cities do. As soon as the baby pops out, they say, nope. Up to 5 years after, I've heard in some cases.
Just like Ron DeSantis said, betray baby. I mean, listening to all 117 episodes now, now 118 with this one is pretty crazy. That's a lot of episodes.
That's many episodes.
That's more than 118 hours because episodes are long sometimes.
Exactly. Some of the episodes are 2 hours.
And we appreciate the
review. Can you believe we do that for you guys?
Anyway,
next review. Finally, political podcast that doesn't put me to sleep by Guke. I first discovered Jeremy and Gage on TikTok and quickly found myself awaiting each new episode. As a trans woman living in southern rural Indiana.
Oh, geez. Mike Pence land.
Yeah.
Christ.
It's insane the stuff I hear just going to the store or at work. Wow. I'm not out at my job, and it's maddening to hear all the crazy takes my coworkers have on trans people. It's wild just letting that shit fly in the workplace.
Yeah, you kind of have to, too. You can't really do anything about it.
That's nuts. Like, just like, no, like, being the person that lets it fly.
Oh,
like,
yeah, okay.
Dog, you're at work. What the fuck?
Like
are
letting
you doing?
Letting fly like just horrible.
Like transphobic takes.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there in the office.
I thought you meant just like not being able to like defend against
them.
No,
I don't mean like being cool with it because you have to in certain instances. Yeah. Like obviously. I mean just like letting that shit come out of your mouth.
Oh yeah, no, that's crazy.
You just water cooler talk.
Mm-hmm. You think it's a safe space for you? No.
Yeah. You think you can just, I don't know, show up to work that you hate anyway and get paid enough to maybe like kind of live somewhat happily kind of sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then you just got to deal with that bullshit all day. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, tough
but
break.
But anyway, listening to Hitto has given me tons of information in a way I can understand and keeps my attention while also making me laugh. Thanks to the boys, I can now confidently argue and back up my beliefs with my conservative family members, a common theme here throughout mm-hmm. these reviews, mm-hmm. who feel like they need to invalidate my existence at every opportunity. God damn, that's awful. I'm so sorry. Unfortunately, I'm still a Wednesday weenie since $15 an hour feels like $7.25 these days. Thank you guys for such an awesome pod and keep up the great work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're making what minimum wage should have been a long time ago. I respect the grind and only give when you can, of course.
Exactly.
Gotta put food on your table for yourself first.
And when you want to become our real friends.
Our last one is from YoungSate13. It says best postcat, but I'm going to guess it's supposed to be podcast. Best podcast.
I think we could reasonably.
I'm going to assume that. They say this is an informative podcast that brings the news in a slightly less miserable manner that is funny and relatable and great. Proud listener and hoping to upgrade to Sunday sermon listener once I get my student loan paid in the next few months. Paying a student loan in a few months is crazy. I bet you got those Biden bucks.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Those illegal, unconstitutional
ridiculous.
Biden
you
bucks.
You could always enroll in the SAVE plan and defer that payment so you could pay us.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Give when you can, you know?
Exactly.
We got any from Instagram
yes,
today?
Yes, we do. We have one from Instagram from Indy. Hello from Ohio. I found y'all from one single clip on TikTok, and I've been hooked ever since. I listen to the pod every day at work, sometimes at home at unholy volumes because my dad listens to Real America's Voice everywhere he goes. Mm. If you haven't heard of it, for the love of everything holy, don't watch it. I can only assume that that's like it's either a Fox News show or a crazy conservative radio show.
I'm thinking a radio show. It's like the anti-Hitto.
It's giving like Mark Levin.
Yeah. You know? it's like, oh God, what's his name? Dude that died. I can't even remember.
Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh. Yeah. That guy was a demon.
Bro just let the N-word fly on air too.
Yeah, he said some crazy racist things and no one talks about him anymore. And you know what? That's a dub for everybody.
I guess so. Bro faded into obscurity much like Tucker Carlson.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that'll happen to Tucker
fired.
Too.
Oh yeah. My goodness.
One thing we do want to announce before we get into the news this week is that we are going to be doing another Q&A once we get to 1600 on our Patreon. We'll post the like official goal onto the Patreon and pin it to the top. Because Patreon doesn't let us set goals anymore.
Can you believe
reason.
That? Can it used to be like they do that to us?
A whole function that showed you a little progress bar in the bottom, but we can't do that anymore for some reason.
Whatever.
But we'll be doing another Q&A when we hit that goal. And we'll give time for you all to submit questions, and it'll be a little bonus episode once we hit that. So there you go. Switching gears dramatically, though.
Dramatically switching gears
into the news, for this
news that's much less fun right at the top of the hour. Over the weekend, Hamas launched a surprise attack from multiple points, land, sea, and air from Gaza onto Israel. These motherfuckers came in with paragliders in 2023.
Yeah.
It's fucking ridiculous and a huge failure on the part of the IDF for just letting this happen. I mean, you got to consider Gaza, quite literally the world's largest open air prison. Not only is there a fence surrounding the whole strip, the whole strip, keeping all 2.2 million people inside.
Yeah.
There's also a blockade by sea stopping them from getting out that way.
And for context, for anybody that doesn't already know or that hasn't listened to our previous takes on Israel and Palestine, Palestinians have functionally been relegated to second class, even third class citizenship in Israel.
Israel's an apartheid state.
It's an apartheid state. Palestinians are confined to areas in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, which, as Gage said, is the largest open air prison in the world. The IDF, which is the Israeli Defense Force, spends a lot of our U.S. dollars oppressing Palestinian people, bombing them basically whenever
killing
they want.
Killing journalists.
Pouring cement into watering holes. And Palestinians have like what is it, like 4% of their drinking water is actually safe to drink and doesn't just poison them.
And all of it's controlled. All of the flow of water is controlled by Israel.
Yeah, it is one of the, if not the largest humanitarian crisis on the planet right now, that we are in a way, not even in a way, we are directly complicit in causing and not resolving. And now it has resulted in a really horrible attack, which requires a lot of nuance to talk about. The first thing I want to say before we even like really get into exactly what happened is that Two things, actually. One, again, this requires a lot of nuance.
Yes.
There's been a lot of just really bad fucking takes. Of course, we have typical conservative demons that side with Israel because they like authoritarianism. But there's been a lot of bad leftist takes that we can get into as well. And the second thing is that Palestinian liberation is just as valid as it was before this attack.
Absolutely.
We're going to get into all kinds of atrocities that have happened and will happen. But regardless of what has happened, the position that Palestinians deserve liberation and their own sovereignty is just as true today as it was before the attacks happened. Mm-hmm. Keep that in mind as we talk
about this. No matter what, the position of Head in the Office as a podcast, yes, me and Jeremy's take, our 100% take that we will always stand behind, is freedom for the Palestinian people.
Yes.
Because they have done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. They have only been subject to brutalization at the hands of Israel and the IDF and even us through our complacency, yes, with our funding for years, since what was it, the kibbutz in 1948, when 750,000 of them were just kicked off of their land.
Yeah, and it's important to recognize that it hasn't always been like this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is what we see, the way in which Israel is broken down today and the treatment of the Palestinian people isn't how it's always been.
Mm-mm.
This was a plan that was imposed, I think, I want to say by the United Kingdom, right?
1948, it was Britain.
Yeah, it's like, well, of course it was the Brits, right? It's either the Brits or us. It's always either the Brits or us. But it hasn't always been this way. It doesn't have to always be this way.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that tells you any kind of solution just won't work is either misguided or just isn't thinking hard enough, isn't creative enough.
Yeah, Britain sold to what would become Israel the land that Palestinians were living on, marketed it as if no one was living there and that Jews after World War II were left without a home, sold them that land that they wasn't theirs to sell, and then the Israelis came and kicked off all the Palestinians that were living there in their ancestral homes.
It's really bad.
It's ridiculous. But now that we have some bit of context aside, back to the events of Saturday morning, so Hamas sent boots on the ground and launched barrages of missiles onto various Israeli towns surrounding the Gaza Strip.
Oh, and Hamas is like an extremist group that operates within Gaza, by the way.
Yes, yeah. Hamas is an Islamist fundamentalist group that has control over the Gaza Strip,
mm-hmm,
because they have no other standing government for complex reasons that we will get into after I detail
happened on
Saturday.
The people that compose the group, I'm pretty sure, are Palestinians.
Yes.
But don't associate them with Palestinians broadly, right?
No.
Like, don't do the American thing of associating an entire group of people with one small extremist group.
Not all brown people are not all brown people in Afghanistan are the Taliban, and not all brown people in Palestine are Hamas,
even though the State Department may tell you otherwise,
even though the IDF will tell you otherwise and is actively pretty much telling you otherwise. But anyway, so far as of Sunday night, I don't have the numbers for today because, you know, a guy had to work all day and didn't have time to be checking the news like that. So as of Sunday night, the AP says that over 700 Israelites were killed by Hamas in their attack so far, with many, if not most, of the casualties being civilians as they rampaged through towns and even a music festival in the desert where they killed, I think, 240 people.
Mm-hmm. Some of them were even international people coming in.
Exactly.
I think there were Americans in that bunch even.
CNN reports that there have been over 100 Israelites taken captive and some foreign citizens also taken captive.
Yeah,
I think an Italian, maybe someone from the U.S. and a bunch of other people who are not Israeli at all. And that comprises a combination of soldiers and civilians, women, children, the ilk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it all sounds pretty bad, and it is. And Netanyahu responded, swiftly authorizing airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, targeting locations believed to be occupied by Hamas, killing 400 Palestinians, again, as of Sunday night, and injuring thousands.
Yeah,
thousands. I do have some updates from today. So far, I don't know what the name of the neighborhood is, but Netanyahu and the IDF have leveled an entire neighborhood, leveled a bunch of buildings, and displaced about 130,000 Palestinians from their home.
Yeah.
They no longer have a place to return to as a retaliation of Hamas's attack.
Yeah.
If you can't tell from the way I'm saying it, this is a wicked escalation.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wicked escalation.
Because Gaza is geographically a very small portion of Israel. It's a small portion of land.
Israel itself is very small.
Yeah, but there are, again, 2.2 million, somewhere thereabouts, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And of course, they're all about to be punished for something that a small group did in a terrorist attack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be really bad. I know that Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, has already said that he's cut power to Gaza.
They cut electricity, they cut water, and they cut escape.
Yes.
Which I don't know how you can really justify cutting escape. I get that
escape's
wanna,
always been cut. Like, you can't get out.
That's true.
Right?
It's a prison. Yeah. It's a prison. I get that you want to keep the terrorists in, but in doing that, this small portion of the population, you also keep all the innocent Palestinian mm-hmm. civilians in. And what happens when they don't have a home to return to? What happens to the 130,000 people so far that will not have a home to return to? Well, they can't leave.
What happens is you further radicalize them against you, Israel, and that results in more terrorist attacks later down the road.
I don't understand why people can see the argument that, like, okay, Hamas has come into these Israeli towns and they are killing civilians. I'm saying that's bad.
Yes.
That is bad. I recognize that's bad. But people, largely people on the right, are coming through, and warmongers in general like to come in and say, oh, well, they're killing these civilians. That's justification for us to do these crazy aerial bombardments on these innocent people because we believe there to be military targets amongst them somewhat. Mm-hmm. But you can never really tell. It's like what America did in, what, Fallujah, where they said anyone over 15, any male over 15 is an enemy combatant. Come on now.
It's a very American way to respond to all of this.
But we can understand why an Israeli would want to retaliate harshly when that happens at the hands of who we designate as a terrorist, which is a political designation. But we can't understand when the brown person's family is killed, the brown person's child is killed in an airstrike, and they're radicalized against the Western power or the power that is backed by the United States itself.
Yeah, and that's not an endorsement of anything that Hamas did, but you need to recognize that there are material conditions that have been perpetuated by the IDF that encourage this kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. And it, like, ultimately, a lot of people have been saying, like, oh, if Palestinians stop fighting, then the fighting ceases. But if Israel stops fighting, then, you know, they are eradicated or whatever. All of the power is in the hands of Israel here.
Yeah.
They are the state. They're the ones that control the territory on which Palestinians live. And they're the ones that are responsible decade over decade for the depravity that they are living in. They are creating terrorists much in the way that the United States created terrorists through our involvement in the Middle East for decades.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, right? If you continuously create conditions of instability where people don't have safe drinking water, where the average age is like 25 or something like that in the Gaza Strip, then of course they're going to be radicalized against you. And of course they're going to do insane things like murder civilians. That doesn't mean what they're doing is right, but we need to recognize who is structurally responsible, who has the power to change what is going on right now. And the only way we change any of this is the liberation of the Palestinian people. That's the only way you ensure that terrorist groups don't pop up. Terrorism doesn't happen when things are all good and happy.
No, it doesn't happen in isolation. There are complex sociological machinations that make it so that people have to rally behind these groups.
Yes.
And that's just the way it is. It doesn't mean that these groups are right in doing what they're doing. I can sit here and I can condemn the violence that Hamas indiscriminately does against Israeli citizens who have functionally done nothing wrong, because I have a nuanced take on this, mm-hmm. because I understand some of the history. I don't claim to understand it all. It's a complex topic. But I also understand the asymmetry that is inherent to this conflict in Israel, a place that has the full faith and backing of the United States military and the United States Treasury going up against people who are living in squalor.
Yeah, well, and speaking of that, like, the IEF dropped the fucking ball here.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it was some kind of cultural or historical celebration or something like that that was going on. I think celebration of a war victory, by the way.
Hamas exactly attacked on the 50th anniversary of the day that I think Egypt and Lebanon and other Middle Eastern countries attempted to, I think, invade Israel.
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember the exact history. But yeah, the IDF dropped the ball here because they have the backing of basically the entire West. Yeah. They have the Iron Dome. They have tons of military funding from the United States to protect themselves. And somehow, how many people from Hamas invaded?
I don't know exactly how many people. I know they sent like 70 people in as reinforcements after. It was a couple hundred.
Let's say a couple of hundred guys were able to get across and destroy so many people's lives, kill however many hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And the IDF had basically no response as it was going on. They were literally caught with their pants down.
And they're still trying to claw back cities and areas that Hamas took.
How does that happen? Hamas has basically no resources. They get some weaponry and some amount of funding through other countries that are kind of
Iran,
empathetic, sympathetic towards Palestinian plight, mm-hmm. but it's nowhere near the amount of funding and support that Israel gets from the West.
Not at all.
It is an insane act of complacency, and I don't know. Again, they totally dropped the ball. Israel, it's an insane act of complacency for Israel to basically be unprepared for something like this. Mm-hmm. And again, because they created the conditions for a group like Hamas to gain power, and because they had basically no response, blood is on their hands, yeah. Undeniably.
And an interesting thing about this is I think right now this is the only time where Israeli casualties have outweighed Palestinian casualties. Mm. But I need to emphasize that is not going to last, and no. That has not been the trend in history. I think in 2021, during the 10-day war, a couple dozen Israelis died during that 10-day war. That was when the Al-Aqsa Mosque got raided, right? 2021, late 2021?
I think so.
Anyway, a couple dozen Israelis died, where I think over 1,000 Palestinians were killed in retaliation for that. Yeah. That's usually how these things play out. The death tolls have been wildly skewed towards Palestinians this whole conflict. And I say that because Netanyahu has came out and vowed, quote, mighty vengeance, announcing a formal declaration of war with Hamas, and has plans to now fully occupy the Gaza Strip to, again, root out Hamas.
Yeah, and
that's scary.
We can't undersell how significant this is. Like, this isn't one of those things that just, like, happens every couple of years where some act of violence is lashed out against Israel and then there's some kind of military response. This is the largest operation we've seen Hamas do ever. Mm-hmm. And I would think that the retaliation from Israel will, of course, be disproportionate and will be also historic. Like, a lot of innocent people are going to die. It's going to be very, very bad for Palestinians.
And giving a hint into what will happen in the coming days, IDF spokesperson Richard Hecht said this, quote, "The significant thing that preoccupies us right now is the stabilization of control in the Gaza Strip. We have targets for the next 12 hours to end the Gaza enclave, to control the entire enclave and kill all the terrorists in our territory."
Mm-hmm.
Nuts.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
What does that mean? So far, what they have done to kill terrorists in their territory is not send boots on the ground to target specific locations and kill specific people that they know are tied to Hamas or get into areas that they know are tied with Hamas. They are just shelling targets.
Yeah.
And when you have a place like Gaza that is so densely packed with people, you cannot shell the military targets that you are looking for without also shelling full neighborhoods full of civilians.
That's what shelling is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And it's hard because, again, you see awful takes on social media. You see right-wingers get on there and talk about, well, Hamas is just, they have to do this because Hamas is using civilians as human shields. It's like, okay, but I still don't think that justifies just blowing up neighborhoods.
Yeah. Well, and I think Hamas also, they took, captives. They kidnapped people.
They took Israeli captives.
Because, well, one, they want to use them as shields, of course. Mm-hmm. But also they probably want to exchange them in some capacity.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, there was some other conflict where they kidnapped one Israeli soldier and got 1,000 Palestinians in return.
Nuts. That's a crazy ratio.
Which is wild, but I think their idea here is, you know, take a couple hundred people, we'll get even more in return.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if that's true. Maybe the IDF will just say, fuck it, we don't need those people back and, you know, eviscerate Gaza. I don't know, but there's a lot up in the air right now, but either way, it's going to be very bad.
It's going to be bad. I'm very anxious for the people of Palestine in the coming days.
Yeah.
Response from the Hamas side, Hamas commander Mohammed al-Dif said that this operation was a response to attacks on women, the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the ongoing siege of Gaza, which these are all horrible things that have happened in the past or are currently happening, and they are true. But when your operation and your response to those injustices that did happen to you are going in and taking captive civilians, mm-hmm. killing entire families of civilians in Israeli towns, it kind of fucks that message.
Yeah.
It kind of fucks it. Hamas are not revolutionary freedom fighters here.
Yeah.
It's a group of Islamist fundamentalists that are kind of in it for themselves.
Yeah. Look, when it comes to Israelis and Palestinians fighting, the right wingers are insane, right? Again, the right wing in this country and in other countries support Israel because they're strategic militarily for the location that they're in, but also because they like authoritarianism and Bibi Netanyahu is an authoritarian. But leftists that come out here and support Hamas blow my fucking mind.
Yeah.
I think leftists get so desperate for some kind of revolutionary force, or some kind of revolutionary operation against oppressive forces in the world that they latch onto literally anything that has any kind of significance in geopolitics or in domestic politics or whatever it may be, we cannot elevate Hamas to being this quote unquote, the quote unquote Palestinian resistance. Like that's not what they are.
Yeah.
They are terrorists. They executed a terror plan and they have existed so far because of, again, conditions perpetuated by the IDF.
Yeah.
They are not going to liberate Palestinians. And in fact, even putting them in the position of the Palestinian resistance feeds directly into IDF propaganda and offers them the pretext they need to just kill more innocent Palestinians. We need to recognize that Hamas is not going to be the ones that liberate Palestine because they're not even doing it. This would be a totally different conversation if they targeted like key military locations or they went after officials or specifically the people responsible for the oppression of Palestinians, but they went after innocent people. Average Israelis are not complicit in things that the Israeli state has done.
Yeah.
It's just, leftists need to be able to have a good take when it comes to foreign policy. And you get those good takes by understanding where power is centered in any given situation that you're looking at. We can believe two things at the same time. We can say that what Hamas has done is wrong, but also recognize that they exist because of the conditions perpetuated by Israel. And we don't need to say what Hamas has done is right.
Not only is it the conditions, is it the conditions that Israel puts onto Palestine that created Hamas. It is Israel itself. It is Bibi Netanyahu himself who funded Hamas in, I think, 2014 in an effort to get rid of the current peace movement that was happening. They directly funded Hamas in a little Palestinian civil war that was going on, and so that they could take out the other faction so that no one would be vying for peace between the two states. Yeah. They directly stopped peace talks and the establishment of a Palestinian state by funding terrorists and are now complaining about those terrorists that they funded. When Hamas goes and does these things, it is what Netanyahu wants, because Netanyahu does not want a solution where these two groups can coexist.
Yes.
Netanyahu wants a solution where Israel is just Israel and there is no Palestine whatsoever. So when Hamas does this, it gives him the justification to treat it like how America treated 9/11 and go in with full force and do whatever they, quote, need to do to get the job done.
Yeah, but I don't want leftists to fall into the trap of supporting Hamas, because again, it feeds directly into the IDF's narrative. And of course, you may say like, oh, well, the IDF is going to be insanely brutal against Palestinians anyway, which is true, or maybe true to some extent, but you need to look, nothing we can say on this podcast is going to influence what Joe Biden does or influence what the West does with Israel broadly. It's certainly not going to influence anything Bibi Netanyahu has to say, even though he might be a hito head himself. I doubt it, though, for some reason. But it's important to have the right positions when things like this happen. You should have the analytical tools in your arsenal when things like this happen so that you can immediately have the right take. And the right take is not supporting a group of terrorists merely because they're doing violence against a state or perceived to be doing violence against a state that you recognize is oppressive, right? Mm-hmm. Israel is an oppressive state. Benjamin Netanyahu and the IDF have perpetuated conditions of apartheid that again lead to groups like Hamas existing, but any kind of not all violence is created the same.
Yeah.
And just because Hamas is doing violence in the territory that isn't occupied by Palestinians doesn't mean that that violence is productive or good or morally permissible. Violence can be a tool. It doesn't mean that it's categorically wrong all the time. I would expect that any kind of revolution is going to contain violence. But to say Hamas is revolutionary is to severely diminish what revolution would really be for Palestinian people. They are not some kind of organized liberation front. They are a terrorist group that feeds directly, again, into the narrative that Bibi Netanyahu wants the international community to believe in.
And to even add a little bit more nuance and get into some more takes that I've seen all over the media and Twitter by crazy conservatives like Ian Miles Chong, they love to get on and talk about, well, oh, okay, you say that the Palestinian people can be separated from Hamas. You can say pre-Palestine without supporting Hamas. What about how Palestinians overwhelmingly support Hamas? What about how they elected them to leadership in Gaza in 2005 or 2006? I don't have all the years right, but either way, what about how they elected Hamas to leadership? One, they elected Hamas to leadership because it was all that they could do after Bibi Netanyahu funded them to neuter the peace movement that was going on in the country. And two, I can understand why Palestinians would rally behind Hamas, even though they are not a good group of people. Because when it comes to people who are going to at least say they're fighting for you, going and doing these things to the people who are directly oppressing you, or just laying down all of your arms and letting Israel kick you out of your homes, kill your children, steamroll what should be your country and your territory and your ancestral lands, anyone would rally behind the group of people that is at least going to pretend to defend them.
Yes.
In the face of absolute oppression, anyone would rally behind that. And you can't fault Palestinian people for cheering when they take over an IDF tank, when they blow up an IDF tank. You can't. You have to understand the complex sociology behind it.
Yeah, no, the only solution here to all of these problems is to end operations against Palestinians.
Yeah.
They can't be colonized anymore. Because, again, colonization and perpetuating conditions of depravity are going to lead to more terrorist organizations. Even if you obliterate Hamas, in the process of doing so, you will create more people that are radicalized against you, and eventually, somewhere down the line, they will go and kill more Israeli civilians.
Well, it's because of how they're obliterating Hamas. Exactly. Is how they're going to get more Hamas, because they're going and, again, shelling neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to the 130,000 people that do not have homes anymore? Yeah. What's going to happen to all of the children that are injured and the children that are killed? Their parents, understandably, will want to take up arms and fight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. That how it works for any conflict anywhere in the world, whether or not you designate the people as terrorists, mostly because they're brown, or you give your backing to them because they're an ally for you, a strategic ally for you in the Middle East.
Yeah. No, it's a really bad situation. And I really hate when I see leftists fall down the trap of supporting groups like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Palestinians deserve so much better, but you got to understand, if you are, I don't know, hesitant to support freeing Palestine, you got to understand, like, there's material reasons for everything that's going on. And those in power are always the ones responsible. Palestinians don't have the power to end the violence, because occupation in and of itself is a sort of violence.
Yeah.
And if you just look at the status quo and you think, oh, well, they've been occupied for a long time, so they, you know, things that should be normal at this point, you can't accept. Humans aren't going to naturally accept living like that ever. They're always going to struggle against those kinds of conditions. And that struggle will be violent and will be unorganized and will get innocent people killed. But that doesn't mean that's right.
And it's not even that. It's just that Palestinians have been, Palestinian land has been taken over for a long time. It's that it continually gets taken over.
Smaller and smaller.
Israel continues to push the boundaries of their borders. Motherfuckers from Long Island fly in and take homes from Palestinians in the West Bank, and Israel allows them to,
Eric Adams
and then
himself
protects them by the IDF. What is going on? That is awful conditions for people. Mm-hmm. Palestinians don't have control over their own electricity, the water that they border, their own power, anything. They have control over nothing.
Yeah. Well, and especially when you, like, if you're somebody living in Gaza, and you recognize that, one, Israel has so much more power than you and they control everything about your existence. And then, two, you recognize that basically the entire world, or the entire Western world at least, is against you and is for your oppressors.
Yeah.
What kind of action do you think is left in the range of things you can do to push back against your oppressors? What do you think is your recourse there if it's not violence? And again, that's not to say that Hamas is justified in the content of their violence, but of course violence is going to occur because what's being done to you is a sort of violence. It's just, it's important to grasp all the nuances here and to have the correct take. Don't be a reactionary in supporting one side or the other. You got to understand there's a lot of causes to a lot of this, and it all links back to the United States and Israel ultimately. Mm-hmm.
And it is very important to note that while we have spent a lot of time, obviously and rightfully, condemning Hamas for indiscriminate killing civilians and condemning Israel for doing the same thing, I have to point out that the IDF will continue to indiscriminately kill civilians.
Yeah.
And the only real difference is that they'll just be doing it from the air, and they can say, oh, we maybe thought that there might have been a military target at this location.
Well, yeah.
Just like what they did to the Associated Press building back in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
They blew up a fucking AP building because they said, maybe Hamas was there. Even though I think evidence came out that they weren't.
Yeah.
They weren't. You just killed a bunch of journalists.
No, it's exactly what the United States does anytime we do special operations, which we have to call it a special operation because it's not a war, yeah. Right? They can hide behind the legitimacy of having, like, personnel and legitimate military operations. But, of course, what they're doing is just killing people all the same. Mm-hmm. Killing Palestinians that have no connection to what happened. Or even if they do have a connection to what happened, you're going to be killing them and a lot of other people as well.
Yeah.
It's going to be really bad. The IDF is going to make it significantly worse. I don't know what's going to happen to people in Gaza. It's going to be very, very bad.
Yeah.
And it's going to be because of the IDF.
They're going to make one of the worst humanitarian crises in the world even worse.
Yes. Yes.
And that's crazy.
Yeah, and we're not going to do anything about it.
And the Western world is going to rally in support.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, no, occupation's got to end if we want anything to change. The United States has to abandon their support of Israel.
That's never going to happen.
It's certainly not going to happen with who we have in office now. Because I already saw Biden came out and was just like, we are Israel's strongest ally. Yeah. It's rock solid.
It's like crazy. We will give them so much more money.
It's going to be really bad. Obviously, there's Israeli victims. The families didn't deserve any of that, of course. They are just living under a system that they happen to benefit from. But yeah, no, the state of Israel itself, demons, all of them. Mm-hmm. And everyone who supports them, demons. All the right-wingers that are flocking to the aid and saying, like, we need to, I don't know, glass all of Gaza, demons. All of them demons.
Don't trust them. Come on now. It's insane. I don't understand how people can confidently get on Twitter and just say, yeah, all of these Palestinians deserve to die because of Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, tell me you're stupid without telling me you're stupid.
Like, they're some of the poorest people on the planet. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you can just cut off all of their electricity.
And they do these things.
Yeah.
Like, we mentioned that, yeah, Israel is going to be cutting off their electricity, their water, everything. They've been doing that.
Yeah.
Just indiscriminately throughout the day, and it hasn't been constant like they will now.
Like, Israel has stopped building materials from getting into Gaza that could have been used for, like, sanitary facilities to clean the water.
Uh-huh.
They have poured cement into watering holes that people were drinking out of before this attack even happened. The violence has been going on for a very long time.
Yeah.
It's just highlighted now because there was a terrorist attack inside of Israel, outside of the Gaza Strip.
Mm-hmm.
And
unprecedented terrorist attack because the IDF fumbled here.
It's unprecedented. It's majorly historical. Things are going to get really bad. But again, it all links back to those that actually have their hands on the levers of power. And that is Western countries that support Israel and, of course, Israel itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm interested to see what happens to Netanyahu here because he's like the security guy. You know what I mean? Like, he is like Mr.
Fascist.
Mr. We're going to crack down on Palestinians, but it's to, you know, keep Israel safe for everybody. Didn't work. Obviously, you've been cracking down and it clearly didn't work. So.
Maybe he'll get ousted again and then just come back just like he did this time.
Yeah, that's crazy. That
was one of the things that surprised me the most. Mm-hmm. I had no idea Bibi was back.
Apparently it happened last year, too.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. I thought, what was the other guy?
I have no idea.
He was so irrelevant. I can't even remember his name, but I remember it being big news when he got voted in.
Yeah, well, welcome back, I fucking guess.
Uh-huh.
Terrible situation. Anyways. Moving off of geopolitics.
Exactly.
And onto domestic politics.
On a purely political issue.
Uh-huh, a purely political issue, but, you know, a war of our own, really.
Exactly. A battle I've been fighting for a long time.
Against, something that seems like a distant memory compared to everything that popped off in Israel and Palestine. I don't know if it's just because, like, I had COVID and I was just kind of sitting in the house for doing really nothing.
It did happen like a week ago, and that's a long time for American politics.
But yeah, I think you all know what we're talking about. Last Tuesday, in typical podcast fashion, happening on a Tuesday, the House of Representatives made history as Kevin McCarthy was removed as Speaker of the House. And again, this is this is another historic thing.
Yes,
that we're talking about this episode. This is the first time a Speaker of the House has ever been removed.
And
which is crazy.
That's my favorite part about this is that it was Kevin McCarthy, someone who bent over backwards and sold his soul to not only the devil, but also Matt Gaetz to get the power that he held for only a little bit of time, only to have it stripped from him in historic fashion. And he's such a historic loser But it's not the kind of history that gets its own textbook chapter. It's the kind of history that a couple people write mediocre books about. And that's really all he deserves.
Especially because, like, this seed was planted, like, 9 months ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's undergone a full pregnancy cycle at this
point. He did not get a good night of sleep in the last 9 months, because I bet Matt Gaetz, every time he saw him in the hall, he's like, you know, I can kick you out whenever you want, whenever I want to, right?
Yeah, and he did it.
And he did. And he kicked him out over not shutting down the government.
Mm-hmm. It's a post-birth abortion, you know what I'm saying? Just like the Democrats
want.
Just like the Democrats want.
Well, that's what he gets for capitulating with the Democrats to stop a government shutdown.
Yeah, all of this, again, is because of a rule that Kevin McCarthy agreed to when he got his job back in January that said one person can call for a motion to vacate, and that means the entire House has to vote on it. And it turned out to be a disaster, just as we predicted long time ago.
Frankly, I'm surprised it lasted this long.
Me too, yeah. Well, and it's like, it's one of those things that I didn't know if it was going to happen. Yeah. When we got close to it, I was like, okay, yeah, it's kind of up for this dude.
As soon as he tweeted, I'll never give up or some shit.
But back when Gaetz was threatening it in, you know, previous, you know, debt ceiling and other issues that we've covered on this show, I didn't ever know if it was, like, really going to happen or if Gaetz was just going to threaten it and never do it because, like, it could have been bad for him politically. But he fucking did it.
Oh, boy, did he do it, too. Uh-huh. It was so good.
So as you all know, we averted the government shutdown recently by kicking the can down the road with a 45-day clean extension of the budget with no real hiccups other than Ukraine not getting any funding for that extension of the budget. This couldn't have passed, of course, without Kevin McCarthy and moderate Republicans within the House. And the far right in the House got basically no concessions out of that 45-day extension. Yeah. And it's seeming like, or at least from their perspective, they thought they weren't going to get really anything out of budget negotiations. And this made them live. And they decided it's time for Kevin McCarthy to go. So after Matt Gaetz called for the motion to vacate on Tuesday, or he said he was going to call for a motion to vacate, Kevin McCarthy tweeted, "Bring it on."
That shit aged like milk.
Bring it on, they did, because Kevin was voted out of the speakership by a vote of 216 to 210, with a total of 8 Republicans voting against Kevin, along with the entire Democratic Party.
God, so that so is good.
That's rough for Kevin McCarthy.
So good, and it like. The only notable person in that lineup, I think, was, like, Matt Gaetz. Like, the only person that, like, immediately recognized was Matt Gaetz. Lauren Boebert backed down.
Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene.
They didn't want to do it. They didn't stick to their guns and fire Kevin.
Yeah, I know. The Freedom Caucus is, like, what, 25 people? Something like that. And only 8 of them voted to kick him out. And the entire Democratic Party, of course, voted to kick him out because it's fucking Kevin McCarthy. So he lost his job. And he's out.
Like,
he's
that's
done.
So good. Kevin should have got on there and just called Matt Gaetz a sex trafficker.
Uh-huh.
He should have just got on there and started airing out all the drama. He should have started airing out everything that the House something committee was investigating him for, just on the House floor to keep his job.
And see, you're onto something important there, because the House can't do anything right now. Right.
Yeah.
Like the investigation, the impeachment into Joe Biden, they can't do that right now because they don't have a speaker. They can't do bills. They can't do the budget. They can't do, importantly, funding to Israel that they probably would do.
That they really want to do so bad right now.
If there wasn't any hangups with the speaker right now. So nothing can happen until they elect a speaker, which means Republican leadership have to come together and decide who they want to prop up as their next guy. But importantly, they have to win over those 8 Republicans that voted against Kevin.
And it's crazy because they have a month to do this and also do a budget.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really bad. They've said that they're going to meet tomorrow, October 10th, tomorrow for us.
Okay.
And they're going to vote on
us.
The first, they're going to start voting, because this is probably going to take a while, on October 11th, which is Wednesday. Again, bad for the Hiddo heads amongst us, because it's going to take us a while to get to that news. But apparently voting's supposed to start this week. This leaves the House in disarray with really no ability to get anything done. And I don't know what's going to happen from
That's
here.
That's crazy. If I couldn't get anything done at work, I'd get fired. I'd be out of there. Yeah. I couldn't just keep my job and just keep going. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, and before we get on to talking about who it could possibly be, because I have some predictions, in a very, let's say, liberal Gen Z fashion, McCarthy blamed everyone else for what went wrong instead
That's
of himself.
Good. That's good.
Because when things go wrong, the generation nowadays blaming everyone but themselves.
All these screenagers out there, not a lick of it.
After he got fired, he was playing the victim at a press conference where I'm not going to play any of it right now. I could summarize it by basically saying he said something along the lines of, like, I tried my best and that's what counts. It's the Democrats' fault.
That's crazy. He broke out putting a pack and smoked, and that's all he's got to say.
Mm-hmm. He was blaming Democrats. He said Democrats voted for chaos or something like that. And he was doing the thing where it's like, you know, don't be sad that it's over. Smile because it happened.
He's smiling so hard because he got his painting. He got his painting, and that's it. He thinks he's getting a textbook chapter. Little does he know.
His argument, along with a lot of other conservatives at the time, is that, of course, Democrats voted for chaos. But the thing here is, like, what has Kevin ever done for the Democratic Party? Like, what incentive do they have to vote for him?
Exactly. They have no incentives to keep him in. They actually have all of the incentive to make the Republican Party look like idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Gaetz just handed them such a huge win on
Golden
a silver
ticket.
Platter.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's GOP infighting. Why would we, like, if this was a thing happening with Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, Republicans wouldn't vote to keep Nancy Pelosi for the sake of the institution? What are we talking
and
about?
And now Democrats get to go in and go on the campaign trail because Let I remind you, we're entering an election year.
Yes.
And talk about how the conservatives can't keep their shit
together.
They
can't govern.
They can't get anything done. Yeah. They're out here fighting with each other, and they're fighting with each other to the extent that it will probably shut down the government. Mm-hmm. Usually those all get pinned on Democrats. Usually government shutdowns and budget hiccups all get pinned on Democrats because they're deficit hawks, they overspend. But now they get that easy rhetorical dub. Mm-hmm. They can say, look at the kiddies fighting.
Yeah.
That's what's doing it. Look at him.
Yeah, no, I'm totally in support of Democrats doing this.
I was worried they weren't going to.
Well, yeah, and I'm surprised that they didn't go with, like, the civility politics route. You know what I mean? Because usually they're like, oh, well, we got to just protect the institution, these sacred halls type shit. But they didn't do that. They voted him out, and I'm very happy to see that they're doing that because, I don't know, it's good. It's good to have your... Don't interrupt your enemy when they're in the middle of a mistake. Right?
I thought there were going to be enough holdouts to maybe keep him in.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I was
they
not confident
been, right?
in the Democrats in the Senate. And frankly, are any of us?
And that's the thing, right? Is like if Kevin McCarthy was... See, I don't know if he lost his job because he's not strategic or he's just dumb or he's ignorant or whatever
all
it is.
All three.
But, you know, all three, certainly. But if he had any strategic bone in his body, he would have found the most conservative Democrats in the House. And
there's
he
a lot.
And he would have cut a deal with them.
There's
right?
the fucking anti-abortion Democrat from Texas. Why like, couldn't he talk to that guy?
He would have cut a deal with him to some degree, saying, like, I'll give you this, you give me that, just vote for me as Speaker, and, like, we can work out a deal. But he didn't go to any conservative Democrats. He didn't go to Hakeem Jeffries until the very end. So, of course, Democrats didn't bail him out.
And
why
would
they bail him out?
He only would have needed, what, like, 16 of them?
He would have needed 8 of them.
Oh,
or six,
yeah.
6 of them, actually.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's so doable.
Uh-huh.
That is so doable. Bro's got more faith in the Democratic Party sticking to their morals than I do.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
All you had to do is try to cut a deal. But no, he just, as AOC said correctly, I think, he wanted it for free. He offered nothing to them. In fact, a couple of days before that, he was blaming Democrats for almost getting to a shutdown. And then he expected them to just bail him out because a couple of his own people were mad at him. Of
what
course not.
What a fucking dumbass. Bro didn't want to put the blame on the people who said, no, you are gonna cut Social Security or you're fired.
Uh-huh.
Because I think Matt Gaetz and the Freedom Caucus people were offering a 30% cut to Social Security as one of their non-negotiables for the upcoming budget. That's wild. Every once in a while, we post a TikTok about how Republicans want to cut Social Security. We will lay out the vote for y'all. We will post headlines, clips, irrefutable evidence, and you'll say, nah, they don't really want to do that.
we'll play clips of like several prominent Republican senators saying like, oh yeah, we got to cut Social Security and Medicare. We'll post a headline of them saying like, oh yeah, we need to make it illegal for people to have universal free school lunch.
Yeah,
and you'd be like, nah, that's not true. That's fake news.
That's not true. You're stretching it. They obviously don't want to cut Social Security. It pulls so high. It pulls so high because you don't listen to them. You don't open your ears.
Yeah. The question becomes, though, who's going to be Speaker?
Oh, my God. Let me be the Speaker.
Who's going to be third in line for President of the United States?
Me.
It's not Kevin anymore. Crazy to think he was third in line to be President. God forbid something happened.
If something happened to the White House.
To Biden and Kamala Harris. If something happened to both of them and Kevin was president, McCarthy.
Oh my God, man.
The top two options right now, and I'm not kidding, when one of them is Jim Jordan, which is fucking crazy. Jim Jordan, if you don't remember him, some of you may remember him from the 2019 Donald Trump impeachment. He was the guy on the committee that was doing the impeachment of Donald Trump who would just not shut the fuck up.
Nice.
He just constantly kept talking. interrupting people, defending Trump. He was glazing it up, and he didn't zip it up afterwards. It was crazy.
Man, that's good.
So Jim Jordan's on the list.
Jim Jordan rears his nasty little head in like a bunch of the crazy votes too, doesn't mm-hmm. he?
Yeah. Oh no, he's wild. And the other one is Steve Scalise, who was also crazy, but a little bit less notorious. Scalise has been McCarthy's number two for a while, and Jim Jordan's also been a close ally for Kevin McCarthy. Both of them are demons, but I would think that Jim Jordan would probably be the pick because Matt Gaetz liked Jim Jordan.
Was Jim Jordan the people that they were trying to get instead of McCarthy in the first round?
He was one of the people that got proposed, yeah. But Jim Jordan didn't want it then. He wanted to support Kevin. But Kev's out. And Kev, by the way, said he's not going to run for it again. I don't know if we said that.
You think he'd stand in solidarity with Kevin and not run?
I don't know that he has like convictions like that. But Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz said like he would support Jim Jordan, but Gaetz has also said, crazy that Matt Gaetz has all this power.
Dude, I know.
Sex trafficker.
who let this guy do this?
Yeah.
Anyone could have called this vote.
Yeah, no. Don't support Matt Gaetz, but what he's doing is crazy right now. You know what I'm saying? But he said he'd support Jim Jordan, but he still wants the rule in place that you can vote them out.
Man, that's one vote. You know, is anyone wholly bad?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to put that out there.
The complexities of human morality.
This episode's all about nuance.
Yeah, yeah. Another fun pick would be former President Donald Trump.
Oh, I'd cream myself, bro. I'd love that. Oh, my God.
Trump has been floated as a name, and he has even indicated interest. Apparently, he's going to be in D.C. at some point while voting is happening. So,
dude, come on. No, that's the best option.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the best option.
It would be the funniest, and it would be kind of scary a little bit that like that happened.
Oh, absolutely. But like what Republican would realistically say no? Like if that actually got proposed in a vote, like are they gonna actually say, what mm-hmm. Republican respects the institution enough to say no?
Well, and Marjorie Taylor Greene already said Trump's her number one pick for speaker.
Hell yeah.
I don't know if that's just virtue signaling or if she's like enough people are gonna vote for him to actually like win the speakership.
Now then,
that would be nutty.
Imagine if something happens to Joe and Kamala. Trump is third in line.
Man.
Bro gets back in and then he can still run again. Because can't you have like 10 years of the presidency if you get in?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
God, that would be so crazy, dog. Could you imagine Trump becomes speaker? That's the best outcome for us.
That's the best outcome. Close number two for me would be Nancy Pelosi speaker again.
Oh fuck, I was gonna say the other option's a Democrat.
Nancy Pelosi speaker would really get me going.
Yeah. Donald Trump as speaker would be really fucking funny.
But it's
the GOP would be to be clear, the GOP is already in a bad position right now. Like this makes them look really, really bad.
Awful.
Infighting to this degree is
awful.
Bad. But Donald Trump becoming speaker, they're cooked as a political party. That's fucking crazy. Could you oh my God, that would be excellent.
If Donald Trump became speaker and fucking lost the next election, which I think realistically Donald Trump would lose, I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket so soon, but based on what's happened before, I think he would lose. Being that would just cement him as the Republican Party,
mm-hmm.
and no one would be able to turn their back on him.
Yeah, that would be super sick.
Oh my goodness.
But here's my official take.
Okay.
Here's my official take on who the next speaker is going to be for the Republican House. It doesn't matter.
Mm-mm.
I think that any Republican who becomes speaker at this point will either themselves be a far-right lunatic or they're going to have to capitulate to their far-right flank or basically risk losing the position in the same way Kevin McCarthy did and sending the House into chaos again, of course. Regardless of who it is, the Freedom Caucus has already demonstrated that they will sink their claws into them and control them and get them to do whatever they want. It's not going to matter who the next speaker is because this far-right populist rhetoric that Matt Gaetz uses, that Donald Trump uses, that has now become common within the Republican Party, it wins them elections more than the average conservative schlock does, right? The small government, lower taxes on the rich, that
tax
kind of thing.
Breaks.
John Boehner and Paul Ryan dealt with this to some degree back when they were both speakers under Barack Obama, to a much lesser degree, of course, but they dealt with a similar phenomenon. Whoever is stuck in the speaker's role will be in the same position that McCarthy was in, or again, they'll just be a far-right lunatic themselves. Maybe they'll be more strategic than him. It's not that difficult, but you could be, right?
Yeah.
But the challenges in the direction of the party, importantly, is going to be the same regardless of who the speaker is in the House. It doesn't matter. They are merely fulfilling a historical role at this point.
I wonder if Matt Gaetz's shenanigans could go on for so long and reach such a breaking point when it comes to the infighting that your Mitt Romneys in the Republican House would end up pulling a Democrat and switching sides.
That is the only way I see, like, Hakeem Jeffries or Nancy Pelosi or some conservative Democrat winning it.
Well,
right?
Yeah, that's definitely the only way that that can work. But God, I wonder if that's like the only way that someone reasonable is going to become Speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That'd be so sick.
It just, I just think it really doesn't matter now, right?
I hope like the Democrats hold out.
The only way that like personality would matter in the speakership is if it's Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
because that like that is just so that is we're living in bizarro world if that happens.
He's the personality.
Yeah, if that happens, that'd be crazy. But otherwise, it really doesn't matter which Republican takes the gavel. Doesn't matter,
man.
Time to move on.
I think it is. I was kicking my feet when he got kicked out, though. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. It's so embarrassing for him.
I'm happy
so,
about it.
So good for me.
Yeah, no, he's, Kevin McCarthy sucks. Nobody likes him. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he got voted out.
Yeah, obviously.
Democracy in action. I'm glad to see him suffer. I hope he cried after that.
I feel like Matt Gaetz is going to stick his head in the sand on the, you. If you want to be speaker, you have to allow us to, any one of us, to call a vote to kick you out.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. That's so good.
It seems like he's going to stick with that. And you do wonder if, like, Matt Gaetz is going to bumble his way into, like, actual political power at one point.
Uh-huh. Well, he kind
of
is.
He's demonstrated he has political power, but he's still pretty vulnerable as, like, uh-huh. one of the far-right guys.
As a sex trafficker.
He could, well, of course. But he could pretty easily be excommunicated, like how the RNC did to Madison Cawthorn after he revealed the
orgy
stuff. Oh,
fuck, yeah. I forgot about that guy.
Right. He could get Madison Cawthorn. It's not clear if Matt Gaetz is going to be able to hang on to power, but you know, you wonder if he is like strategic or if he's just he's the kind of fascist that is like totally ineffective at governing, but really, really good at causing a spectacle. Who knows? I don't know.
Could be. I don't know. I just it'd make my day. It'd make my week. It'd make my year if we could just get some of the Lincoln Project guys to switch sides.
Oh my God! Could you imagine Nancy Pelosi speaker again? God, that would mark the downfall of the GOP if a Democrat wins. I can't predict who it's going to be, but if any Democrat wins the speakership, Republicans are basically cooked.
It could be Hakeem Jeffries. It could be the fucking anti-abortion guy, Henry mm-hmm. Cejudo or some shit like that. I'd be happy, mm-hmm. no matter what, if we could just get someone with a D next to their name in there and the pure optical loss that would be for them. I don't care who it is. Mm-hmm.
I feel like we could place bets on like who Republicans will put up to be speaker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they like last time they put up Donald Trump, but I think they just did that as a virtue signal.
100%.
We'll probably get like at least one Bibi Netanyahu, even though you got to be a citizen to be the speaker. But you don't have to be in the House, right?
Oh, like, we'll probably get one that SS guy that spoke at a Canadian.
That's crazy.
You think we could hit FanDuel with this? You know,
make some money.
You know how they bet on presidential elections in Vegas and stuff?
Yeah, hey, bills are a little tight. TikTok was a little tight last month.
That's what I'm saying. You think we could get the Vegas bets and put our money on Jim Jordan?
I feel like it's gonna be Jim Jordan, but
what do you
maybe
think the over under is on Pelosi?
Like percentage?
Or votes? What do you think the betting odds are?
Man, if Pelosi wins, I will be screaming.
You think I could hit a parlay for like number of people who go up, people who get the most votes in each round? Like, come on, yeah. If I put $5 on it.
Yeah, how many, let's see, person who wins the pot is who gets closest to number of rounds.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Hear me out. Because like if Matt Gaetz gets his thing of I can call a vote to kick you out at any time, throw up a parlay, at least three speakers get kicked out, this person goes up next time. Hey, man. I'm just getting creative with it. Money's a little tight.
Another historic moment in politics in the United States, in the world, really.
Yeah.
Pretty important. And we'll see what happens. We'll monitor it closely.
100%. We'll monitor the situation closely. Make sure to keep you posted with updates.
Next thing we have to talk about. This is some news that flew under the radar, understandably.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Kevin McCarthy stuff, and then this stuff dropped, and then right after that, the Israel-Palestine shit popped off with the terrorist attack. So we got to talk about this now, but again, it flew under the radar a little bit. It's a little bit of border wall discourse. little bit of immigration discourse, a little bit of
with a spin,
with a liberal spin.
Yeah,
not in a good way though.
No,
I'll just read the headline directly. It's from the AP. It says, "Quote: The Biden administration says it is using executive power to allow border wall construction in Texas." So once again, we have Biden being just as bad or nearly as bad as Trump on the wall.
I don't want to hear a lick of Democrats don't do anything at the border. We have open border policies right now. Mm-hmm. Billions of fentanyl-laden immigrants are coming through to give your kids fentanyl.
Yeah, Biden is, it seems like he's restarting border construction. Again, he's using a Trump-era policy to harm immigrants to some extent.
He's using the Trump-era policy.
Yeah, the Trump-era
policy. Like, obviously, like, what, Title 14 was, like, the Trump-era 42, policy. Yeah. Title 42 is the Trump-era policy. But this is the Trump-era rhetoric.
Yeah, there's a little bit of context we need to clear up. Not all of this is necessarily on Biden. He did promise not to build any more wall during his run in 2020, mm-hmm. which has been true up until now, to be totally clear. Part of this was unavoidable because Congress passed funding for the border wall in 2019 that has to be spent. That's not up to the executive branch to decide if it gets spent where it has to get spent. So the money's got to go somewhere no matter what. But to make matters worse, and like this is why I bring this up. It wouldn't really be much of a news story if Biden just had to spend it because Congress said he has to.
He quietly did it. Shit was already passed. He has no power over the purse.
It wouldn't be a big deal if that was the case. But to make matters worse, this is a quote from the New York Times. It says, the administration also said it is waiving more than 20 federal laws and regulations to allow for the construction of the barriers. Which to me is like, if you don't want to do it, why are you waiving those laws?
No, that's great. 20 of them?
Yeah.
20 of them? You could have bought really expensive materials.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wasted the budget for it right there without actually functionally building. The government loves to waste money. You could have done that.
I think a lot of the rules that are being waived are like environmental protections for like animals, ecology, wildlife, that kind of thing. And those are the ones being waived, which is like if you don't want to do it, you'd think put more barriers in front of having to do it rather than less to drag out the process at the very least.
Uh-huh.
But that's not what happened here. And the administration is claiming to maintain its position that walls don't work because Biden has said that before. His Secretary of Homeland Security has said that before. But the Secretary of Homeland Security is also quoted writing this, quote, there is presently an acute and immediate need to construct physical barriers and roads in the vicinity of the border of the United States in order to prevent unlawful entries into the United States. So according to what was written by his own Secretary of Homeland Security, they think walls are needed.
Do walls not work?
Highly disappointing.
Like, do walls not work or do they?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Pick a position here, and then at least if you picked a position and fucking stood firm on it, no matter how bad we think it is, because it's probably going to be bad because all his immigration policy has pretty much been mm-hmm. bad, at least you can get a political win and try and win over people on the Republican side, because that is the only issue that they can really stand on 2 feet on right now is immigration.
It seems to me like Biden is just kind of trying to like appease the left or liberals a little bit on immigration by giving this sort of like conciliatory, like, I don't want to do it, but I have to do it, while also secretly, just like in the background, acknowledging that like, yeah, we need walls for this, even though we don't need walls for this. But it's just like, it's the kind of liberal politics where it's like, the plane where it's like dropping bombs and it's like Republicans and it's just a regular plane, Democrats,
and
it's like Black Lives Matter and rainbow flag. It's that kind of politics. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's the kind of conciliatory, like, I'm sorry, we just have to do this kind of thing that is just as harmful.
Procedures, bureaucracy, respect for the institution.
It's like, if you didn't want to do it, you wouldn't waive those laws and you wouldn't have your Secretary of Homeland Security writing, we need more walls.
And you could have found a way to waste the money. So that mm-hmm. construction didn't actually happen. That money was authorized. Maybe there are complex things within the authorization that stipulated that, I don't know, X amount of wall has to be put up along X length.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there isn't, you could have just said, let's buy the most expensive things and let's pay contractors the most.
It's 20 miles of wall in comparison to Donald Trump. I think Trump put up a total of like 80 new miles of wall.
Yeah.
A lot of what Trump did was just rebuilding old barriers and upgrading old barriers, which is where he gets like the 800 mile number or fucking whatever he likes to cite. In reality, it was only like 80 miles of new wall for Trump. For Biden, to be fair, it's only 20 miles of new wall, but it's just like, why are you going to say publicly that walls don't work, that you don't want to do this? Why are you going to promise in 2020 that you're not going to do this? And then when it comes time to do it, you say, yeah, Congress is making me do it, but also at the same time, time, I'm going to have my own guy write, like, we have to do this.
And I'm going to make it way easier for the people who are doing it to do it. I wouldn't want them to get tied up in bureaucracy. Nobody likes that, guys. Come on.
It's just like conservative immigration policy with a different coat of paint is all it is. And it's really disgusting. It's annoying. And it's not great to see.
No.
And again, this flew under the radar, but I felt like it's necessary for us to cover.
And it's just wild that they do all this. They do all this brutal shit at the border and Republicans still win on the issue.
And they still complain. Like, how are they going to complain that Biden is not as good as Trump when he's doing the same shit?
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Anyways, I think that sums up the Biden border wall story that I wanted to talk about.
Most of the main news this episode, all the crazy shit that happened this week.
To end off this episode, I want to bring up a couple of extras, and that's some court news.
Court news.
Yeah, both of these have to do with trials.
You know how we love litigation.
Yeah, there's not too much to say on either of these, but the first one is Trump being on trial. Our next Speaker of the House, Donald Trump, was pictured in a New York courtroom last week.
Let's go.
This is where we got the gamer laptop photo, which I thought was so fucking sick. You saw that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really hard. This is not one of the trials for his many felony charges. This is a civil fraud case where the New York Attorney General... Yeah, I know, this is just so many. The New York Attorney General alleges that Trump inflated the worth of his assets on official documents, which is fraud. You can't do that.
Man, this guy's living in a courthouse.
Yeah, you can't lie and then, you know, take out credit against the assets that you lied about. That's not how that
works.
Yeah,
bro, the studio's worth about $300,000.
There isn't a ton to report on here again, but I think Trump is very fucked because the judge is someone who has ruled against Trump before. It's also a judge that Trump has mocked before.
Nice.
And you may say, well, that's not going to matter because he has a jury, right?
He's impartial.
He doesn't have a jury here.
Oh, no.
And the reason for that is that the lawyer that has the gaming laptop that we saw in the photo forgot to complete the paperwork that would have requested a jury trial, which means it's just a judge that gets to decide the ruling here.
See, it's crazy because that's how you know that Trump doesn't have as much money as he said.
He's got those TikTok lawyers. he's got the TikTok lawyers.
Bro claims to have billions of dollars yet can't hire a lawyer with a regular laptop.
Yeah. All of what the lawyer got paid went to that gaming laptop. You know what I'm saying?
Can't hire a lawyer that does basic paperwork to help out their client who's paying them. Come on now. That's crazy. He's got to be a double agent.
The gaming laptop lawyer, she was on like Fox News or some right-wing broadcast saying like, oh, I didn't forget to fill out the paperwork. That's just a left-wing lie. But it's like, you didn't fill out the paperwork. If you did fill out the paperwork, you'd get the jury.
Damn, bro. Me when I lie.
Yeah.
Why would you not want a jury? And why would you not want to go through crazy jury selection to get
she forgot to do it.
Come on.
So now this basically guarantees he's fucked. Like, the judge doesn't like him. Seems like he's committed the crime, at least to some extent, or civil infraction or whatever it's considered. He's committed the fraud.
She'll get on Fox and be like, you know what? This is a New York case. It was losing whenever it happened. What jury would we get that wouldn't be automatically biased against us? This is progressive New York. This is Eric Adams, socialist New York City right here.
Well, and it's like, it's really funny because Trump's, at least his online defense of this was like, I didn't inflate the prices. I actually deflated them. They're worth a lot more than what I said. And it's like, what are you? That's also fraud.
I'm not releasing my tax returns also. I'm rich.
Oh, man. That's actually, that's just so good. I love that Trump is just everywhere on trial. And I was amazed they let a camera in there to get a picture of him.
That's good, man.
That's like, it wasn't a fumble, I would say, but it's like a funny thing that the judge just allowed it at the beginning. He had to have known, right?
Aren't they televising one of the trials? For his like four massive indictments.
Is it maybe the documents one or one of the J6 ones?
Georgia one?
Oh, it's Georgia. You're right. Yes. Yeah, it's Georgia.
Yeah.
That's sick.
That's good. That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, the Georgia judge was like, yeah, this is going to be televised. Very excited for that. Maybe that's a live stream moment.
Oh, my God. Is that a live stream?
Might be a boring live stream to watch, but that'd be crazy. The last piece of news here is actually kind of huge, but it's going to develop over the next several weeks because this is like an ongoing trial. This is Google being sued by the FTC, Federal Trade Commission.
For what? Selling my data without asking me?
Oh, no, that's legal. That's totally legal thing to do. Yeah, no rules against that.
Fucking dumbass.
But Google right now is being sued by the FTC for anti-competitive behavior, owning basically 90% of the search engine market share. Google also has exclusive deals with Apple and Samsung. They have basically integrated themselves to tons of different services, so no competitor can ever have a chance to compete against
Google
them.
Getting trust busted?
Maybe. That seems like what's going to happen here if the FTC wins their case. They also have a ton of companies that they use to boost their own revenue, which means that other companies can't come in to like capture that share of the market. You know what I mean? But also, the thing that I thought was shocking that has come out again about this case, none of this is supposed to be out yet, by the way. It's all supposed to be secret and private.
Oh, this all got leaked?
But there was a leak that came out. Google has been accused of manipulating search inquiries behind the scenes to deliver more advertising to your screen and therefore more click-throughs, which is more ad money for them. So basically, to explain this in like individual terms, you'll type in something to Google, searching for something, right? And Google will change that search without you knowing behind the scenes. So it returns to you advertisements that they think you'll click through on. They're basically turning the knob behind the scenes so that they can build up more of their ad revenue. And this is obviously deceptive to the consumer because you're just being, you know, sold more things that you don't want to have to pay attention to. But also it's deceptive to advertisers because they can just change the rate at which they show or don't show your ad, but keep charging you the same thing or charge you even more and show your ad even less. They can just control everything. None of it is based on actual market inputs. It's just based on how much money they want
to
make.
That's crazy. Anecdotally, totally believe it. Mm-hmm. I swear to God, I will type something into Google and I will get 30 other things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is not the best search engine in the world. I swear, maybe everyone was right saying I should switch to DuckDuckGo.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, there is DuckDuckGo and there's Bing, which is like...
You'll never catch me on Bing.
The number one search thing on Bing is Google, right? but yeah, Google is a monopoly and they basically have the infinite money button for ad revenue because they can, again, they can just turn the knobs and manipulate everything because they're a monopoly and own like 95% of the market share. But it's really deceptive for consumers. And at this point, like... You know my position on a lot of things that I view as public utilities. It should just be nationalized.
No, because like it's Google. You know what I mean? You can't. I feel like you can't really get by without Google, and you can't really get by without internet in the modern age. And Google, again, it's so integrated into everything. Why don't we just kind of take it up?
It's like it's a search engine, right? It's a public utility. Like everyone needs it at this point to function. And the immediate response would be like, oh, you want state run searches so they can just change your information so you can't find dirt on them? It's like, I don't think they'll be able to cover that up for real.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And I feel like competition in this space is just going to lead to another Google.
It's like there are way more whistleblowers in the government than they are in industry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Also, like we can operate public utilities without the government becoming authoritarian.
Exactly.
We can own
the fucking libraries.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
give Google to the people who run the libraries.
The same critique applies. It's like, oh, you think the books, they're going to have books there that criticize the state?
Yes. they do. Yes. Every library you can go into.
Yeah, you could go into a Detroit library and it'd be like the city council of Detroit are literal demons. Like, you can find books about that. You know what I mean? They exactly. don't withhold information from you. But yeah, Google is really massive and maybe they'll get trust busted. FTC's won before.
That
so maybe they'll win.
That would be crazy. Mm-hmm. I feel like they might not win just because it's Google, though.
I think they won against Microsoft. I don't know if it's more than a decade ago. It was a while ago they won against Microsoft. And in the background, as Microsoft was under all of this attention from the feds, Google was amassing all of its power. Microsoft has been since broken up, but they've accumulated a lot of power again because our government doesn't like doing trust busting. Uh-huh. But there's a possibility that Google loses this. And based off this like clearly anti-competitive behavior and deceptive behavior for consumers, like it seems like something might happen.
Damn, it's crazy. And you know they're a monopoly when I'll never use Bing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll never use Bing. I'll never use DuckDuckGo. Like, let's be real here.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen.
And that's what really sucks about monopolies is, Google has integrated itself so much into pop culture, everyone's life, and that's the best case that I can give.
It's a verb.
Just nationalize it.
It's a verb.
Google it.
Yeah. Google it. It's a verb. But also, there's another critique here, which is just, this is another example of how the quote-unquote free market, which you can't call it free when it's a monopoly, right? But the free market doesn't really operate as it intends to, right? Because Google, as I said, is a sort of public utility at this point and isn't designed to produce what is best for the people that need to use it for whatever they need to use it for, whether it's, you know, searching for grocery stores near me or using Google Scholar for scholarly articles, that kind of stuff. They exist to make money. Their objective is to make money.
Yeah.
And that is seemingly not congruent with what people actually need it to do, which is search up things to find information that they need. So it's another example of the free market not actually meeting people's needs. The needs and the need of the person who wants to make a bunch of profit just aren't meeting equilibrium as they're supposed to.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's a crazy thing to think about. I wonder if some guy a couple hundred years ago wrote about that.
Probably not. Probably definitely not.
Probably not.
I bet you couldn't find anything. No manuscripts.
I bet you couldn't find it in a public library.
Yeah, there's no marks.
I bet the government wouldn't want you to know about that information.
Uh-huh. Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of this episode. This is a long one.
It is a long one.
So thank you all for sticking around.
I hope you like it, you greedy motherfuckers.
Yeah, you guys always are haranguing us for long episodes.
Say, every time we drop an episode that's like an hour or 10, you're like, where the long one at?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of conspiracies about, like, the stuff that happened in Israel. Like, oh, did the IDF make it happen? Did they let it happen?
Yeah.
But I'm starting to think y'all made it happen for making us cover all this news. Like, y'all are in there manipulating Congress, causing terrorist attacks.
I want a two-hour episode this week.
We're getting a two-hour episode.
I gotta do what I gotta do. Like,
and, look, I don't see that level of commitment out of anyone else's audiences. That's all I'm gonna say.
I don't see that kind of commitment out of anyone in my life, except for you.
Yeah, a lot of people use the term cabal as like an anti-Semitic dog whistle.
Yeah.
But really what the cabal is, the real cabal, is Hitto listeners that are behind the scenes influencing world events.
They said, what do we want to hear Jeremy Gates talk about this week? How about this?
Yeah, you're just turning the dials on whatever country you want to hear us talk about.
Exactly, because we're the number one geopolitics podcast.
We're on to you.
That's right, we got it. And we're on to the leaders. We have the leaders listed right here, and we're ready to name and shame them, starting with Caden Kraut, Lord to the Radiant, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, 40% Spite, Dylan B., Andrew Harris, Mike Jablinski, Matthias T., Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Jim Rich. Fuck, Rich Soro. They're getting to me, man. They're getting to me. Oh, Tari, no. Gavin Meyer Maldonado, Hunter W., Fergalaki, Max Vasquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mooberry, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Bagel Burrito, Cincy Alex, Joe Stenstrom, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sam 601, Colleen Cuts, Gregory Isn't My Name, Very Yook, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Crawfishin', Benneth Bennington III, Alexia Benanti, Nietzsche, Big Booty Beatdown, Moises T, Sam Maloney, Two Headed Boy, Ben Shapiro's Boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis, Luke O'Shea, Cucker Tarlson, Danielle Jackson, The Word of Microsoft, Jennifer Sines, Aaron and His Gundam Gundams, Darth Father, Aaron Taylor, Aiden Taylor.
Oh my God.
Man, they're getting to me, bro. The cabal. They're shooting me with the heart attack. They're shooting me with the forget how to read gun. Corey Chambers, Sewer Snag, Ellie N, John Glover, Devin Hatchard. Guys, we don't really usually record this late.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Retro Mondo.
Meatball Minion, Emma the Dude Slayer, Claire McMillan, Breezy B, Veronica, aka V, Raxon, Ash Smith, the Grotler, Magic Ian 95, Flower Clown, Beetle Bugs, Three Crows in a Trench Coat, Lonnie Rogers, Slavic and Sapphic, Casey Lynn Kelly, Snake Eyes, In Hope of Giants, AK Gone, Equana Don, Zach Lantian, Info Russell, Austin Greif, Marcus Corbett, Caleb Roper, Taylor Rensock, Ishi Teddy, Cammy, Calliope, Reagan, Not Like the President, Pagan Jester, Tylan Freeman, Steak Daddy, Tay Tay, Isaac Hodges, Madeline C, Pab the Pab 69, Kayla Lowe, Anna Valenik, Eduardo Diaz, Casey C, Sayesta West, August, Natalie Valinsky, Particular Pickman, Mason Crack, Jeff Sines, Howard the Duck, Brennan His Egg, JR, Drew Batchilder, and my mom. Thank you all so much for being the cabal.
For being the cabal.
And if you want to be a part of the cabal, if you want to buy your way into heaven, go over to patreon.com.
Exactly.
Head in the office box.
Give tithe.
The only ones that will be saved in this coming rapture are the ones on that list.
That's right. And let me tell you, it's coming. It's coming, all right.
Like the people that are always screaming on the corner, the end of the world is nigh.
Uh-huh. Like the people always protesting at college football games. Mm-hmm. You're all going to burn unless you give tithe.
Yeah, unless you join us at... Head in the office, Patreon. Anyways, thank you all for listening.
Have a great week.